Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And yeah, these are not the circumstances under which we were hoping to come back and talk to y'all again. But here we are, a couple days removed from our Vikings getting mollywopped by the Philadelphia Eagles in a game that ceased to be competitive in first quarter, maybe start of the second quarter. I mean, we're going to talk about that a little bit, but I'm not really sure what more there is to say about it that hasn't been said. I mean, there's not really much analysis outside of we caught a case in that game. But, you know, I am here. You know, the whole crew did brave it, tough it out, and they're here with me tonight to chop it up about the Eagles game and then talk about, you know, the future, the offseason, hope, and all those other things. So QB1, the man for whom the offseason really might actually be the season. What's going on, JR?
You know, I was a little down at the time with the loss, but I'm over it now. And y'all know it's draft season for me, so I'm excited about that. The Senior Bowl has been today, and that's been keeping my mind off that terrible loss from the Vikings team I did not recognize against the Eagles. But like I said, it's draft season. I'm excited. Let's go.
All right. And the man, this is when we knew it was real bad in the game. Because, you know, we've talked about it a couple times throughout the season. But when it's game time, Miles goes into full-on hiatus in his basement, watching the game by himself, no phone, no contact with the outside world. And I think in the third quarter, Miles was out here arguing with people on Twitter, chatting with us in the group message. And that's when we knew, like, yeah, there's absolutely no possible way they're coming back. If the most optimistic person on our podcast, the most optimistic person on the podcast had checked out, yeah, it was a wrap. So Miles, man, how you doing?
You are not wrong, because in the third quarter, when we tried to go for the touchdown on fourth down on the 8 yard line, and I was like telling him to kick the field goal like it mattered. you are not wrong. I'm over it, just because, like you said, like by halftime it was a wrap. So I think, you know, we kind of put our heads around it and was like, this is how they wanted to go out. This is what they decided to do. So, I mean, it is what it is. On to the offseason.
Yeah, man. And then I guess, you know, that's the silver lining in just getting stomped out like we did in the game. You know, there was no enduring heartbreak. There was no, like, moment of silence after the game was over. It was jokes by the third quarter, because it was a wrap. It was done. But Zaxi Prince, you know, take us through your night watching the game. How'd it go for you, and when did you finally just say, well, it's the offseason?
after that pick six? No, but seriously, I probably, once they went up, I want to say once they went up probably about 17 points, I was just like, yeah, this game's probably over. Because we haven't really ever seen the Vikings come back from a deficit this season. They've never had to, but you've never seen them come back from deficit. Oh, this is how it's going to end. So I just need to swallow that giant pill and just kind of move on.
Yeah, but, sorry. Go ahead, man.
I guess with that being said, you know, I guess my random question of the day is, you know, when you guys have experience, whether it be, you know, from, you know, maybe an ex or maybe a hard fought game that you were in and you lost state championship, something, what are you guys' coping mechanisms? What do you guys like to do to, you know, really drown in your sorrow? For me, y'all know I'm a musician, so I made hella beats last night or the night before that. So yeah, I just kept creating music. I'm just like, gotta keep working. So what about y'all?
Well, I feel like I know JR's answer already, but I'm gonna flip it to JR and see if I was right. So JR, what about you, man? How have you been coping with this loss I mean, we all know it's the draft, but I mean, JR, how you been coping with this loss?
You're exactly right. Watching film of draft prospects that I like and hopefully improving the Vikings' weaknesses, what I saw in that game. That's how I cope with it. And slow jams, of course.
Oh, my God. He says slow jams.
Slow jams. I love
my
it.
My man put on some Marvin Gaye, some Luther Vandross, a little Anita.
You can't watch film to hardcore rap. Like, you can't focus like that. You got to have some slow jams on.
I think you might need to tell the people making all the highlight videos because they don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine for like a typical highlight video, but if you're like watching film as an evaluator on somebody, I can't really focus listening to hardcore rap. But you know, you got some slow jams on, it kind of soothes the mood and softens the mood, and it helps you focus.
He watching deep bombs from Baker Mayfield to Jamie Foxx. I'm dead, y'all.
Absolutely, it helps you focus.
Love it, man. I love it, Miles.
Yo.
So what you been doing? Because, you know, we know you are, generally speaking, you know, you're the optimist. You're the one who, you know, kind of leads, you know, with it. You go all in with the team. So, you know, how have you been coping with things?
We all kind of go all in, but I don't really know how I cope. I kind of just, I don't know. I don't like to talk. I don't want to talk about it usually. You know, you always have those Packer friends, or like, I got a Bears friend who sent me a Snapchat, like, talking that mess. I'm like, bro, you can't talk. But like, I get it because we do the same thing. We flip it. So I get it. But I don't know. I guess I just kind of go into a shell and I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. Don't bug me.
For all y'all listening, I tried to cheer up Miles so many times, but to my dismay, he was so sad. I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to have his moment.
I was more mad than sad because, like you said, like Jason, like you said, the game was over at halftime. So, like, this wasn't a heartbreaking loss. This wasn't, you know, this was just like it kind of just all that, like, they did not play one game this season that way. Like, they didn't play the Pittsburgh Steelers that way. They didn't play any team the way they played on Sunday. And I think that's what the hardest part, like, they went so out of character on Sunday that, like, I think that was the hardest part for me. It's like, you just didn't, like, no matter how they lost, if they had lost, like, no matter how, this wasn't the way I expected it to happen. I didn't expect a blowout. Like, I could even expected like a 14-3 type game if they were to lose, but not this to me. I don't know.
I'm right there with you. And I feel like maybe, like, preemptively, I've started to protect myself from this. So, like, this loss in particular, how I would have gone over this, would probably gone out and had way too much to drink and, like, been really hurting the next day, called out for work and all that kind of stuff. Now, since I started, you know, going and training jiu-jitsu, I just went and watched a bunch of videos to try to learn stuff so I didn't get choked out so bad when I went to class the next day. And, yeah, that's how I coped with it. But we've been avoiding it, running away from the subject for, you know, these first few minutes of the show. But we got to get into it just a little bit. And JR, I know you told us you were never going to go back and watch that debacle again. But I'm still going to flip to you first here because I want to get your analysis, your thoughts, your takes on what you were seeing when you were watching this game live. Like, what was it that Philadelphia was doing that allowed them to exploit the number one defense in the NFL so ruthlessly, so efficiently, that they were just able to do, it seemed, whatever they wanted to do with this after their first drive?
RPOs, that's what it was. For those that don't know what RPOs, they're basically just run pass options, as I'm sure you heard a lot throughout the game. So what happens is it gives a quarterback a dual option. He can either hand the ball off or he can throw to the design pass or the design receiver that they have, that certain concept built around. You saw it a lot with Zach Ertz, and you saw it a lot with Torrey Smith as well, and a lot of other targets throughout the game. They really run it to a lot of people throughout the game. They did a really good job designing those RPOs, and it makes it tough on the defense because there's no one way that you can play the offense because there's so many options that they were giving Nick Foles. And what you saw was the Vikings were starting to try to suffocate the run, and they were playing man coverage on the outside. And what the Eagles were doing is they were running a lot of rub routes and taking a lot of deep shots down the field. And obviously Nick Foles was hitting on those deep shots, and they were beating man coverage throughout the game. We saw it against Trey Waynes. We saw it against Xavier Rhodes on multiple plays down the field where he was hitting. He really should have hit Torrey Smith, but early on in the game, but Trey Waynes made a nice play. But Nick Foles made some really nice throws down the field to Torrey Smith. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, they were just flying everywhere. And as I alluded to in our preview show, the Philadelphia interior defense of their defense was really good. They have some questions in the secondary, mainly at corner. I really respected their safeties, McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins, who obviously are good players, but I thought the weaknesses of their defense was at corner. But the Vikings weren't able to generate a consistent passing attack, and that's what really hurt them throughout the game.
Yeah, man, and so a couple things, because I've been led to believe that that RPOs and that sort of thing are gimmicky college things that can't work in the NFL. So how is it that the Eagles were able to run them so effectively against, you know, this high-end NFL defense?
Say that one more time. I could barely hear you. My apologies.
No worries. Like, so we hear all the time, like, RPOs, I mean, these things, like, they've been around forever. Colleges run them all the time. But, you know, what you hear a lot of the time is that those kind of things are gimmicky. They don't work at the NFL level. Like, what was it about the way the Eagles were, I guess, deploying their attack that allowed them to be so successful? And I guess, what would be the counter to something like that? Like, how do you stop run-pass options, you know, so that they can't cut you up the way the Eagles were doing it?
Well, the way to stop run-pass options is you have to have reliable options and man coverage, and you have to be able to tackle well. And that's something that the Vikings really weren't able to do. They weren't tackling well throughout the game, and their corners and their safeties weren't holding up in man coverage. And what you saw was the Eagles were starting to incorporate those run-pass options, and they were starting to run double moves. So it really kept them off balance to where the Minnesota Vikings corners and safeties really couldn't be aggressive, because maybe they were saying, oh, Nick Foles is going to throw a lot of quick game as far as quick hitches, quick outs, and stuff over the middle. But when they started doing that and started trying to jump those passes, that's when they started running those double moves, what you saw with Torrey Smith and what you saw with Zach Ertz against Harrison Smith. So they had a really good game plan, and they made some really good adjustments. And it seemed like Doug Peterson was always a step ahead of Mike Zimmer, and that really was the difference in the game.
Yeah, man. And I guess, Miles, over to you. I guess when you were looking at it, when you were looking at, I guess, the matchups, the outside, the wide receivers, like, what were you seeing with everything that really, you know, JR alluded to some of the double moves and things like that. But I guess what was it that really just allowed the Eagles to, yeah, embarrass us in coverage the way that they did?
Yeah, so I think kind of going into the game, I honestly thought, you know, kind of we've talked about this early in the season. What I thought going into the game, the Eagles were going to play bully ball against us. I thought they were going to, kind of the way the Carolina Panthers did, I thought they were going to, you know, double tight end formations, you know, one or two wide receivers in a formation, and I thought they were going to try to run the ball down our throats and try to control the line of scrimmage in that sense. And then on Sunday, you see, you know, once they got on the field, they completely spread us out, and they decided to go full, you know, full spread option, you know, with the RPOs and doing all that, which really threw me off because I didn't expect it. I think it threw Zim off, to be honest. I thought, you know, from it seemed the way we reacted to everything and the way we, you know, didn't really handle it, I don't think even Zim expected them to spread us out completely the way they did. But they did, and it worked. They trusted their offensive line in a majority of one-on-one matchups against our D-line. Their left tackle, Vitae, held up pretty well against Griffin overall. I mean, they weren't really worried about Lane Johnson on the other side. So, like, and they had, you know, Jason Kelce in the middle. So I don't think they were worried one-on-one with what we had going on. So they spread us out, and they decided to, you know, make our DBs win one-on-one, and they beat us. It worked. They exploited our, you know, they exploited double moves. They exploited some of our zone coverage, and then it did not seem like we were prepared for the run pass option at all, which kind of threw me, because you would have thought, you know, that would have been a big staple that the Vikings would have been looking at in terms of how they might have seen Nick Foles and Doug Peterson beating us defensively. So, it was really confusing and really hard to watch because you just don't see Zim and that defense get beat the way they did. So it was really tough. You know, guys like Xavier Rhodes, you know, he was nicked up. I know he's been nicked up, but him coming in and out of the game didn't help anything. You know, Terrence Newman, in a way, showing his age and showing, you know, the eagerness to want to not get beat. So, like, these guys, you know, you saw in the touchdown before half, Terrence Newman on third, it was like third and 10. He wants to jump the in route on Alshon Jeffery because he doesn't want that completion because he knows it's third down. And then he gets beat on that double move. And then, you know, later in the game, Harrison Smith, on the third down, wants to jump an out route from Zach Ertz and getting overly aggressive and all that. So watching stuff like that was really tough to do. But, yeah, just seeing us get beat the way we did was really tough.
Yeah, man, and it was wild. And I know that we talked about it offline or off air, but it was just crazy that I think that every possible thing that we'd ever expressed any concern about, either in the off season or at the beginning of the season, like all of the things that we had ever been concerned about all kind of came to a head in the one game. So, like, you know, a lot of the off season, there was the conversations, should we have Anthony Barr in coverage or should he be rushing the passer? And then, you know, we saw him kind of, you know, chasing people down in coverage and missing tackles and stuff like that. You know, you had, you know, the conversations about Trey Waynes and, you know, him playing the ball in the air, the hips and things like that. And it seems like, you know, Keenum regressing, Shermer maybe not calling his best game. It seemed like every weakness the Vikings might have had, the Eagles found a way to ruthlessly attack them. Like in the first series when they tried the deep ball to Torrey Smith, Nick Foles throws a better ball and it's a touchdown there too. And I kind of jokingly, I was like, well, we really dodged a bullet there. It's luck. We're lucky Nick Foles can't throw, you know, downfield again, going on kind of what he'd done through the entire season. I guess little did I know that, you know, us dodging that bullet was really just foreshadowing, you know, the impending doom that was coming for us because those plays were there all game long. Like Trey Burton was wide open on that first drive and jumped for some reason and went out of bounds. But like all of those plays stayed open all game, which was just wild to me that Zim wasn't able to make, I guess, those patented adjustments that we're used to seeing him make. Saxy Prince, I know that you want to get in here and, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't let you start off a little bit, not all of it, but a little bit of the quarterback conversation, because, you know, we have some more stuff we want to talk about a little bit later in the show. But just what are your thoughts on things? You jokingly already said that you felt like the game was over when that pick six happened. But as someone who has expressed doubts or had worries or concerns or whatever you want to say or however you want to call it about Case Keenum and him running the offense for the Vikings, I guess, what were you feeling as you watched, I guess, your worst fears come to fruition in the biggest game of the season?
Yeah, I think, I have to start out by saying this. Like, I have been one of, you know, maybe a few who've been a skeptic of Case Keenum, who've criticized him pretty openly about it. But the thing is like, it doesn't make me feel good that, you know, this was the game that ended up happening. He wasn't obviously all to blame and whatnot. I don't blame him at all. But I do think that he did play poorly, which is, you know, it is something that I foresaw happening. And I was hoping that I was horrifically wrong on that, because this is my team too. Like, I want to be wrong on that take, because that means we would have had a Super Bowl on our hands. But you know, you did see some things where, I mean, one of the things I saw that kind of jumped out to me was every time Case Keenum took the snap and, you know, he got to his drop back, you would see him go even further back rather than climbing the pocket brand. And you know, there were other things that did happen, but just, you know, isolating the quarterback position, you know, really outside of that, you know, first drive, you really didn't see Case Keenum play very well. I think that was a contributing factor to why the Vikings got blown out. It wasn't the only one, but, you know, if the defense isn't playing well, you expect the offense to step up. And by the offense stepping up, you know, you hurt Holt by virtue. The defense, you know, kind of gets back into the groove that they seem to be so far out of. But yeah, that didn't happen, and it ended up being that blowout. I think something that we need also credit is like the Eagle. I think JR said it, but the Eagles' offensive line. I think I said it on our previous podcast. You know, they were forced to get reckoned with. I really love that right side of their offensive line, and even Vitae played really well against Everson Griffin, like JR said. So I mean, I think there were some factors that you know, something that we all had said, all concerns we expressed, and you know, the one game that happens, everything that we said happened at one time. So that was really my biggest takeaway from, you know, watching a game that just happened.
Yeah. And I guess to kind of, you know, wrap things up on the game and just, you know, kind of thoughts, takes, I guess, Yank, I'll start with you. What were your thoughts on Mike Zimmer's post-game comments kind of immediately after the game, and then kind of his follow-up comments after you'd had a moment to kind of, I guess, you know, watch the tape and kind of see what went wrong? I guess, what did you take away from that? And I guess, what were the big sound bites for you out of what Mike Zimmer had to say?
Yeah, I think Mike Zimmer kind of, and I think this is part of his maturation, is like, you could really just see him, like, this was my fault. Like, the players, they probably practiced really hard. They probably did everything that they were Zimmer asked them, but he just like, hey, I didn't prepare them for what could happen. You know, it kind of felt like going into that game, Zimmer was just like, okay, I can almost guarantee 99.9% of all the things Peterson's going to do. You know, there's a small chance that he could do this one thing, but I'm not going to prepare him for that because I don't really need to prepare him for that. It's Nick Foles. And that happened to the 0.01% of things that they did to beat us in almost every single series. And when you get blown out that badly, I think it is more so on coaching than it is on, you know, the players. Because, you know, when it's a close game and, you know, you miss a tackle here, you miss this there, or assignments, alignments, all that stuff, you know, then you can sometimes blame it on the players. But it just felt like Peterson had every answer for everything Zimmer was going to throw at him. So then it just boiled down to Zimmer and his post-game conference was just like, you know what, this is on me. And I don't disagree with him. I think that game was it was completely on Zim. So, I mean, that's mostly what I took off of the post-game conference.
Right there with you. I guess, Miles, JR, any different take there? I guess, what were your thoughts, Miles, on what Zim had to say kind of post game, and then, you know, when he wrapped things up again earlier today?
I mean, I think it's kind of status quo for Zim. I don't think he's the type of person in a game like Sunday to kind of throw blame at other places, you know, besides himself. So,
he did call the players soft after they got beat down by Philly, you know, in Sam Bradford's year. So
I know, but at least he's learned to grow from that in terms of being the leader and kind of changing his tone on that, because he knows on Sunday it wasn't just the player's fault. Like, he knows a lot of what he did was wrong, and I'm glad he's taking the blame for that, because that's what it's part of his responsibility and his role, and him being able to come out and say, like, you know, shoulder that on me. Don't put it on my players, because, you know, he doesn't feel he put them in the right position to win. And maybe he's right, because maybe, you know, on some of those double moves, maybe he told them, bite on that stuff. You know, we're not worried about the deep ball. We're not worried about, you know, they haven't completed it all season. And so maybe that's kind of what was conveyed. And, you know, Doug Peterson was like, nah, we're going to go all out, and we're going to, you know, if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, you know, that's kind of the end for the Eagles. So the Eagles decided they were going to, you know, try their hand at it, and it worked. So.
And JR, I guess, any other thoughts about Zim post game, kind of how he wrapped things up on the season? And I guess, what are your takeaways from that? Because I've seen some folks out there kind of, I guess, being a bit surprised that Zimmer, I guess, it seemed to admit that they weren't ready for some of the things that, or some of the wrinkles that maybe the Eagles would have thrown at them. And that, yeah, I guess him being so thoroughly outcoached in that final game.
I wish I had the zapper from Men in Black that Will Smith used on the aliens, so I could just use that on myself for Sunday. this past Sunday. I mean, there's not really much to say, honestly, than what y'all said already. I'm glad Zim came out and admitted that he did get out-coached, and that's good hearing that from him because, you know, he's not being a typical snarky coach where he's saying just outlandish stuff, but he's admitting his faults and where he went wrong. And that's really good hearing him say that so he can actually grow from that and not make those same mistakes again. And it's a similar situation that we saw with him saying that maybe he just needs to step back and be an entire CEO and his clock management skills. And we've seen him improve upon those things from previous, you know, years where he's made those mistakes. So maybe he'll come back and not make this same mistake next year and in future years as well. So it was really good hearing Mike Zimmer come out and say that.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, let's move off the sadness and transition ourselves into, you know, the offseason where everyone is a winner. Everyone won free agency. Everyone kills the draft. But before we can get to any of that stuff, we need to talk about our offensive coordinator because, you know, Pat Shurmur, he's been given a lot of credit for the success of the Vikings offense this year and rightly so, but he's gone now. Probably coming off the heels of his worst stretch of the season. He's gone, and we need to replace him. So, JR, as you think about, you know, Shurmur being gone and the people who are still available, I guess, who is your number one target for the Vikings to replace Shurmur and why?
My number one target would be John DeFilippo, who is the current quarterback's coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Why am I such a huge fan of Flip? For multiple reasons. He's had experience calling plays as an offensive coordinator. He got the best year out of Derek Carr his rookie season, where he was a Pro Bowler. He got something out of Johnny Manziel. And we all know he wasn't the most talented quarterback in the NFL, but he still was able to get some type of production out of him. Also, he developed Carson Wentz. We've seen the strides that Carson Wentz has made these past two seasons. And John DeFilippo has had his blueprint and his identity all over Carson Wentz. And I love that he is from the Doug Peterson tree. He falls under his umbrella. He's had experience with him, and he's had experience with a multitude of other great offensive minds as well. And I just think he's a star in the making. The only bad side to hiring Flip as our offensive coordinator would be that if Minnesota does have another productive year, we probably will be looking for another offensive coordinator in 2019, because I think he's going to be a head coach within the next 2 years. He got some serious consideration for a lot of jobs this year. And I think since he didn't get one this year, he definitely will get one in 2019. So John DeFilippo would probably be my top candidate for the Vikings offensive coordinator position.
And what happened to your man's John Morton? I know that you were – we're kind of beating the drum for him a little bit earlier on. What is he still someone that you have on your list, or has he been scratched?
Yeah, I like John Morton, but the things that I've been hearing that came out about him through Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport and various other media experts or people that are plugged into the NFL have not been good as far as his relationship with players and the coaching staff. And once I heard that, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But from an X's and O's standpoint, I think he's a really good coordinator, and he incorporates a lot of good concepts, and he got the best out of the Jets personnel from this year. Even though he didn't have favorable players to work with this season, he still was able to get a lot of production out of what he had. So from an X's and O's standpoint, I'm a big fan of John Morton, but from the personal side, I don't think it's a good fit simply because the chemistry just doesn't seem like it was good with the Jets and with Ty Bowles.
Okay. All right. Well, let's have a little bit of fun. We're going to have a little bit of fun. And, JR, you're going to start us off because we're talking about quarterbacks. We're going to do a little keep, trade, release, Vikings quarterback edition. So run us through it, JR, real quick. Who you keeping, who you trading, who you releasing, just and a quick blurb of you know, explaining your reasoning for each. And we're just going to go down the line.
Y'all trying to start a war, a Twitter war on.
I'm already in it because I you know, jokingly put up a QB depth chart for training camp before free agency or the draft that folks took a little bit too seriously. I should have known better, but you know, so y'all gonna be in it with me too.
Is this money aside?
I'm sorry, what now?
Is this money aside? Like money, like
contract. Hey, you can. Your reasoning is your reasoning. Spin it how you want to spin it.
All right, so I'll start off with trade. The person that I would trade would be Case Keenum, because I think he has the most value right now. And let's say all these guys have 1 year on their deal entering 2019. So let's say we're all in training camp right now and we have to trade, keep, or cut one of these guys. The guy I would trade would be Case Keenum, because he obviously has the most value right now. He had a career year last year, and we all know everyone's saying he's going to be $18 to $20 million a year quarterback, and we all know a lot of NFL teams are starving for production at quarterback, and Case Keenum's stock is probably the highest it will ever be in his career. So he would be the guy I would trade. Keep, it would be Teddy Bridgewater, because he's 25 years old and I'm still a believer in Teddy. Yes, there's a lot of questions surrounding his knee and his situation, but I still think there is some upside there despite the injury concerns. The guy I would cut would be Sam Bradford, because his injury history just scares me. And like I always say, my famous saying, I like Sam Bradford, but I just don't trust Sam Bradford. And I can never fully endorse or trust him because of his sketchy injury history. So I would trade Case Keenum, I would keep Teddy Bridgewater, and I would cut Sam Bradford.
Okay. All right. Miles, where you at, man?
I mean,
yep.
Jared kind of said it, but I'll flip it a little bit just for the fact that I think just across the league, I think there's still a lot more overall respect for a guy like Sam Bradford in, you know, front offices, just because he has that, you know, he's got that week one and like last season to kind of go over with, and it sounds like he's healthy. Looks like he was healthy enough at the end of the season to play. So I would trade Sam Bradford. I don't know what it would warrant at this point, but I'd see what I could get for him. And then I'd cut Case Keenum, just because I don't want that money on the books. That's a lot of money that he's gonna be commanding. And then I'd keep Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay.
And then draft somebody.
Yeah.
Or sign, yeah, and sign, yep, a veteran backup.
Got all that. Okay. Prince, can we just do yours for you, or are you? I mean, I feel like we can just do this one for you, unless you really want to jump in. You got something to say? You can go ahead. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you basically could do it for me. I actually was gonna go the similar direction as Miles, where I was gonna say that I know that Sam Bradford's still, I mean, around the league, just because of there's still a little bit of not upside, but just what people, his perception of his ceiling is. Especially if you get him around some weapons and whatnot. So I think he has a lot of trade value. So I would trade Sam Bradford. I mean, I'd cut Case Keenum, and then, you know, the thing behind Teddy Bridgewater, just being a young guy, you know, obviously coming off injury is problematic, but, you know, you still haven't quite seen what his ceiling can be. So I think he'd be the guy I'd keep.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much aligned with all y'all. But there's a point that I wanted to make. And when I know for me personally, I won't speak for anybody else in the podcast. I know for me personally, when I'm looking at the quarterback situation and I'm looking at which one I want to keep, and Miles kind of brought it up a little bit, but it's, you know, the price is huge, right? And Case Keenum this season was proof of concept for the way the Vikings had built this offense specifically, which is that you can build a very good offense around these wide receivers that we have here, and getting the ball out to, you know, our skill position players, be it the running backs or you know, the tight ends, etc. I think you're likely not going to get an elite quarterback in free agency. And so if you're not going to get an elite quarterback, why are you going out there to spend elite quarterback money? You need a competent quarterback. And I look at Teddy Bridgewater, I look at Sam Bradford, I look at Case Keenum. If they're all healthy, I imagine right now with all the questions around Teddy, he will be the cheapest of that group. But I see them all as being in the same tier. So if I'm looking at quarterbacks in a similar tier of performance, why wouldn't I want the cheap one? Just like if it's me running the team, why wouldn't I want the cheap one? This isn't about, like, you know, being a Ted head or a Teddy file or whatever ridiculously silly nickname people have given people who they think like Teddy Bridgewater. But if you're running the team, like, I don't think anyone who's being honest with themselves thinks Case Keenum is now an elite level quarterback. So why would you want to pay him that kind of money? Like, why would you want to pay Case Keenum $20 million a year when you know that the entire offense that we ran for Case Keenum was essentially about hiding Case Keenum? Like, or Sam Bradford, who, again, like JR said, tough to trust. Do you want to give him a bunch of money when, you know, I think the last article that Over the Cap put out about quarterback free agency said that the market for Teddy Bridgewater looks like it might be $7-8 million. That just seems to make sense. Draft someone early, bring in a vet backup, and you're good to go.
So, but Jason, the fact that you like Sam Bradford and all these people like Sam Bradford makes me not like Sam Bradford that much more. So
I mean, that, yeah, that does make sense.
I find that problematic. So I just want to interject with that.
That makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense. And Miles, you know, I'm going to kick this one off to you because, you know, this should be the JR question, but I feel like he's going to talk a lot on this one. So we'll let him go last on this because, you know, he be writing stuff about Senior Bowl and all that kind of stuff here. So, you know, Senior Bowl kicked off. We got some measurements. We got some practicing. Who are you looking at, Miles? Who's your favorite prospect?
Favorite or best?
Who's your favorite?
Oh, I've been tweeting about him all day. You know me, I'm a receiver guy. So Deshaun Hamilton from Penn State, he got the call from the East-West Shrine game last week. He had kind of a bad drop in the game, but overall, I really like his film. I think he's got a lot of talent. I think,
you know. Hold up. You watch the East-West Shrine game?
Stop.
You might have a problem. Did you watch the game?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The practices, too.
I mean, I know you watched the practices, but you watched the game?
It was on. There was nothing else on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
It is what it is. No, I really like him, though. I like his film, though. He's like you saw in his one-on-ones today. If you watch, he's really hard to jam off the line. He's got a really good first step. He's physical. Not quite, you know, I think he measured in just a little over 6 foot. But he's got really good hands, really good technique out of his routes. So he's a guy I really like in the middle rounds right now. So he's probably one of my draft crushes right now.
Okay. All right. I mean, Saxy Prince, I know you like the draft, but I mean, yeah, it's kind of early in the process and the Vikings didn't stink this year. So I know that you haven't been, you know, in it as deep as you have been in previous seasons as a Vikings fan, where, you know, come Halloween, we are, you know, right in there, you know, looking through all the prospects. But, you know, Senior Bowl kicked off, East-West Shrine last week. Are you in it enough to have, like, a favorite prospect that's not named Baker Mayfield at this Senior Bowl?
Yeah, man. Dallas Goedert, I think that's how you say his last name. A guy that I'm really kind of been looking for, you know, that athletic tight end, and JR actually put me on to him
a few months ago.
Few months ago, he pulled out.
Yeah, he hurt his hamstring today. He just pulled out tonight.
Dang, the curse of Saxy Prince lives.
Hey, dropping his stock so we can get him in like the third or fourth round. I'm okay with it.
I miss it. Who are you talking about, Yinka?
Dallas,
the tight end from something South Dakota State.
The tight end for South Dakota State.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the curse of Yinka took his legs away from him.
Yep.
Well, I'm okay because, hey, if he falls down, it's good. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard some both good and bad things about him from today. I want to, like, really sit down and break him down a little bit more, see what he is, because I have been asking this team to draft, like, you know, a tight end that's, like, super athletic, but at the same time can, like,
learn
a playbook. That's where that second part.
Uh-huh. Don't be disparaging the good name of the Spark God, David Morgan. Okay.
Oh, it's, yeah. David Morgan is fine. I just need a second one.
Okay. That's fair. And all right. I know we talk a draft, and you know JR took himself off mute before Miles even started talking. He was ready. So, JR. Senior Bowl. We'll let you give us a couple. You know, won't lock you into one. Who are your favorite prospects at the Senior Bowl that, you know, you've been looking at here?
Well, I guess I'll make this Viking-centric since, you know, we need offensive linemen. So the one guy that really stood out to me today was UTEP guard Will Hernandez. He's a guy that has outstanding strength, just a bully. He's that guy that you would love to have as your bodyguard because he just kicks people out the club. That's how he blocks. So he really stood out today in a lot of drills, just manhandled guys. And I tweeted out, it looked like child's play when he was out there today because nobody could get around him. Everybody was attempting to get in his chest and just push him back, but they were unable to do so. So Will Hernandez is a guy that I really like, and I think he would be a good fit for the Vikings. His feet are a little heavy, so he might struggle a bit in the zone scheme, but I think if he does lose a little bit of weight, I think he'll be fine in the zone scheme. He's a guy I think they can get in the back half of the second round. So Will Hernandez is a guy to keep an eye on for Vikings fans that are watching the Senior Bowl.
Who else, man? Give us some more. Give us some more.
I ask y'all, what position do y'all think the Vikings need the most? And I'll pick a guy that I like at the Senior Bowl.
Oof. That's tough because all the positions the Vikings need aren't ones I really want them taking in the first round. who's your favorite tackle. Right tackle?
Right tackle. At the Senior Bowl for the Vikings is probably, I think, Brian O'Neill from Pitt. I think he's a guy that can come in and I think can be an immediate starter for the Vikings. He's a guy that stock is steadily growing day by day. He had a so-so day at the Senior Bowl. He was a former tight end. So when he came into Pitt, he actually was a tight end, like I said, gained 70 pounds throughout his college tenure, and he ended up being a tackle. So he's more of your traditional pass blocking offensive tackle as opposed to a dominating run blocker. But I think he's a guy that can be a plug-and-play option at right tackle.
All right. And give me some mid-rounders that I should look at a wide receiver or cornerback or both.
Wide receiver. He probably won't be a mid-round guy, but he's a guy that will probably go in the third round that I think would fit really well with the Vikings. And that's a guy called Michael Gallup. He's a guy that Miles likes as well. He had a fantastic day today. I'm not as sure of his exact measurements, but he looks to be about 6'1". About 200 or 205 pounds, more of a possession receiver, but he does have enough speed to get open. And you're probably not going to be a fan of him, Jason, because he's not an analytic guy. But as far as tape and traits, I think he's a guy that can be a high-end wide receiver too in the NFL.
Okay, okay. Any DBs that you're loving?
Well, a guy that really stood out today that I think can be a third or fourth round guy is MJ Stewart from UNC Chapel Hill. Go Heels. MJ Stewart is a guy that was fantastic in drills today. He didn't lose a one-on-one rep at all. He can play outside corner right at 6 foot. Tape is phenomenal. Hips are great. The one thing that he probably does lack is he doesn't have great speed, but I think he can be a man-to-man corner.
And just to correct the record, it looks like, because as you were talking there, I went and looked up your man, Michael Gallup. It looks like the numbers people like him just fine.
Okay, that's good.
Because he's stacking up production. Remember, the numbers guys, they just want production. It's not the actual analytics community that gets, you know, hyped up on the height, weight, speed. The people who actually do numbers, like, you know, Eric Eager and co., It's production that they want, and apparently he has a ton of it. So yeah, they like him.
I love how quickly you look them up.
Hey man, quick fastener. Anytime y'all tell me about a wide receiver, I immediately go and look him up to see what, like, you know, his market share numbers and dominator rating look like to see if it's someone that I should like or hate.
Yeah, Michael Gallup is a guy that definitely Vikings fans should keep their eye on for maybe a third or fourth round pick, but he had a phenomenal day at the Senior Bowl, so his stock is probably going to rise as we get closer to April.
Nice, nice. Well, I think we covered everything we want to today. I mean, we went through the sadness, and then we got to the hope and the fun that is the off season. So, I guess what should we be on the lookout for now that we switch gears and you know, there's not games to talk or write about. I guess what can we be on the lookout for, JR? I mean, I feel like you've dropped 8 articles in the last 3 hours, but you know, anything else in the hopper for you for the rest of this week?
It's draft season, man. it's time to shine.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I'll be typing up my senior bowl recap after each and every day. The next 2 days, the practices run through Thursday and the game is on Saturday. So on next Monday, I'll be having another Reading Between the Lines scouting journal talking about everything and what prospects will climb up my board and some that I was disappointed by. So that'll all be included next Monday.
Okay. Hey, Miles, man, how about you?
I'm just working on the draft right now, Vikings offseason stuff. I just like to kind of, you know, gauge some of the – I think obviously the biggest scenario for the Vikings right now is what they're going to do with offensive coordinator position. I think that's going to drive a lot of what the potential QB, you know, situation is going to be. So I'm just kind of keeping my eye out on that stuff. Yeah, just watching film on guys I like and, you know, guys that JR keeps sending my way.
Okay. And Saxy Prince, man, how about you? What are you digging into now that it's the offseason? You still working through the Case Keenum project, or does this game, the last game, pretty much just make you decide to throw that in the trash?
I almost want to be perfectly honest. So bad, but you know, I'll see how I feel towards the end of the week. But I am going to start my, you know, yearly, you know, go through the entire season straight and, you know, see how that goes and see, you know, some consistencies, some things that did go really well, and then obviously things that, you know, will help you know, myself and Vikings fans really to look for, you know, when come draft season or free agency, like, hey, these are the things we're not doing well, so, you know, maybe this is an area we need to focus on as far as, you know, bringing some more talent in specific areas. So yeah, that game really just it hurt a lot of motivation, so
I feel you. And I guess for myself, because it is draft season, the draft season it is good times. I started digging into some numbers and some stuff from Pro Football Focus to really lock into, just based on this last season to start out, what positions and positional grades had the strongest correlation to points. And then kind of rolling that together with, you know, where you can find the best draft values to start thinking about what the Vikings and other teams should do. So at some point, I'll start digging into JR's big board and start messing around with some mocks and things like that. Because, you know, it's the off season, it's draft season. And you start arguing about players who, you know, after April, we'll never hear about ever again. Good times. But
that's the fun part of draft season.
That is the best part of draft season, is how hyped up we get about these dudes. Like, we will argue about a 6th round pick to the death and then never hear about that dude again and just keep it moving. We'll move on to the next thing.
We get mad about undrafted free agents that the Vikings don't sign and do sign and they let go.
it's true. We really do. But we all have our guys. We have our guys. And it's, yeah. But yeah, we wrap up, you know, this season of the Climbing the Pocket podcast with the actual Vikings game and kick into the new season. So I want to thank all y'all for listening to this latest episode. And yeah, we'll be back to talk to you guys pretty soon. Have a good one.